Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Lisa P. from San Diego.
That way you can see me, right? My name's Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Lori, for asking me to be here and for a lot of you that have come out. Loved ones, friends that have been part of my network that are here today, and some of you that I haven't met yet. I like this meeting a lot. I'm hoping to come back a couple more times and get to know you. I brought a couple of my books just to keep me honest. I'm not a big book thumper, but I go to my books pretty routinely. I'm in a big book and 12 and 12 study, and it's my favorite meeting. I've been going there for a long time. I attempted my first sip of a bong load when I was 7 years old. And when my brother said no, he was 16, and I said, if you don't give me a drink, I'm going to tell mom, because I know it's not a good thing. So he taught me how to have a bong load at 7 years old. And my three siblings were, it was my brother, and my sister, and then 5 years later, it was me, so I was supposed to save the marriage. I was supposed to save the family. So I already had a lot of expectations put on me, and it didn't work. It didn't follow through that way. So what I did is tried to be accepted with my siblings by buying pot where I could, and trying to manipulate them to come and smoke pot with me. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. But it was a way to feel a part of. So I led into doing other stuff through pot. It's legal now, so what does that mean? You know, it's like, does that mean like we can smoke pot recreationally and then that's going to lead to alcohol? I don't get it. I don't understand. What's going to happen today with this pot thing? I don't get it. But for me, it was an introduction to a bunch of people that weren't good for me to hang out with, basically, is what it was. So I tried alcohol and I fell in love with it. But I've talked to a couple people that also have this situation where when they drink alcohol and smoke pot, it doesn't mix. Like for me, I get like spinny, dizzy, nauseous, and I usually get sick. So I discovered if I didn't smoke pot that I could keep drinking and I can get drunk. So I gave up the pot thing. I was an alcoholic purger. So I could drink, got a little full. I learned the hard way to excuse myself and go to the bushes or go to the bathroom ahead of time so that I could relieve myself and continue drinking. I was standing, I guess I was like 14 or 15. I hung up with people that were twice my age. Because they were able to get the stuff. And I developed kind of young, and then the people I was hanging out with, they had no scruples, so they didn't care. They were hanging out with a 14 and 15-year-old and getting her pot and alcohol and everything else that I could get my hands on. So I was at this party, and where I grew up in L.A., and a lot of the weekend parties were band parties, backyard band parties, and you know, where you got to pay $5 at the door and there's like three kegs and, you know, you get your red cup and, you know, all this stuff. And I remember standing in the hallway and needing to go to the bathroom to make some room for more alcohol. And somebody passed a joint right in front of me. And you know what happens when I get pot, you know, and the door was unlocked but closed and I opened it up. And there's a story in here about Jim, who drinks the milk and puts the whiskey in the milk. But he had a sandwich. Actually, he had three sandwiches. I had no sandwiches. I had milk. I had milk and whiskey and the wafting of pot. And it came out curdled on the ass of some guy that was standing there taking a leak. So, I'm sorry for that. You're not going to find that in the big book. Needless to say, I liked going into the bushes better because it was fresh air and everything, all that stuff. So I did start with a lot of different drugs when I was in middle school. They called it junior high where I grew up. I used to do cocaine on my desk and usually cut school at lunch and hung out under a bridge and drank some beer. It wasn't by a river, but it was under a bridge. my God. You guys know that, right? So I did a lot at a young age. When I was 14, that's when I started really drinking a lot. I started smoking at the age of 11. So I was watching a movie earlier today, and it was a bunch of teenagers who were smoking and drinking a lot of beer, and I felt really physically nauseous. And I did that a lot. I would go through a couple packs of cigarettes a day and usually had a 12-pack in one hand and a thing of JD in my back pocket. And that's when I went to the band parties. And I actually had one of those when on my 16th birthday. God, the house got demolished, and my sister and I got so drunk, and I blacked out all the time, and she made me this cake, and she came out with it, and she tripped because she was so drunk, and she fell, and her face fell in it, and she cried, and I cried, and we said we loved each other, and it was okay. But like I said, I did a lot of stuff. I liked hallucinogens. I liked anything that would make me feel different. I didn't like the way I felt, basically. I grew up latchkey kid. My parents divorced when I was two. As I told you, it didn't work. My dad was very removed. He's passed now, but he's alcoholic, paranoid, schizophrenic. And so he was pretty removed from my life. My mom was raising four of us on her own, and so she was pretty unavailable emotionally and present, you know, not very present. So, I don't know, do you guys know that term latchkey kid? We never locked the house, but they called me a latchkey kid anyway. So I would ride my bike around and just hook up with kids my age who maybe were caring, had something. Let's go. I used to hang out at the laundromat. There was a man who, weird stuff. God, things are so weird. You wouldn't find this nowadays. There was a man who lived at the back of the laundromat. There was a room in the back of the laundromat, and he was the caretaker. And he would get drugs for us. And we were in middle and high school, and we would go to the laundromat. And then we would get stoned and go in the dryer and then spin each other around. So when I was 14, I met my first boyfriend. We ended up going out for 4 years. He was 21 and I was 14. I met him in a blackout, and I continued for 4 years in a blackout dating him. And he worked for General Motors, and he worked for like the 3 to 11 shift, so I wouldn't see him during the week, and I would go to high school, and then on the weekends, I'd go and spend the weekends with him, and we'd get loaded all weekend. So during the week, it was maybe just lightweight getting loaded. Lightweight loaded. And then I'd get pretty smashed on the weekends. I dropped out of school, and I went on a skiing trip with a friend of mine, and I was so dependent on this boyfriend of mine for my own identity. You know, I would get really weird, like get loaded, and felt so insecure, I would kind of push him to instigate fights, you know, so that he would kind of push me back, and then I'd go, look what you did to me, you know, and so it was really weird, but I couldn't stand to be away from him. But I was invited to the skiing trip, and I went on the skiing trip, and he wasn't there, and I met this guy, and he was even older, and he told me that I should go back to school. And for some reason, I believed him. But I was in high school. I dropped out of high school, so I went to continuation school. And in continuation, they had these breaks where they would walk you out to the street so you could smoke. And then the principal would walk you out there. And you'd smoke, and then you'd come back. Well, there was this girl that I recognized from the laundromat. She used to ride her beach cruiser, and she had one of those boom boxes, we call them, right? Bungee to her handlebars, and she wore these short shorts and this tank top, and she was big. And she was the same age as me, but she was. And then she wore these, do you remember flojos, those beach shoes? And she'd ride around listening to the Scorpions. You guys know the Scorpions? Yeah, the Scorpions. Blaring, and she'd just ride around. She didn't really go into the laundromat, but she intimidated me. You know, I could say that now, but before I would have called her, you know, a bitch. She thinks she's this, she thinks she's so hot. But, you know, as an adult, now I can say she intimidated me, I was threatened. You know, all these feelings that I couldn't identify as, let's face it, I was a little girl, you know. And so I went to this continuation, and she was there, and I went into the principal's office, and I said, you got to get me out of here now, I'm not going to go to school with her. And he said, okay, Lisa, whatever you say, as if, you know, go back to class and we'll see what we can do. It took about 2 weeks for him to come to me and say that he found another school for me that I could transfer to. But in that 2 weeks, I fell in love with this girl. She wrote me poetry. She could see right through me. She made me laugh where it hurt. You know, that stomach. And then I would leave her, and I'd call it happy cramp because I smiled so much. And then, you know, when you let your face relax and it still cramps, you know, so you got to, like, massage it. So she'd give me happy cramp and belly laughing and just all this stuff. And I called her up one day, and I said, what are you doing? And she says, oh, my dad's taking me to this PDAP thing. I'm like, I don't know what PDAP is, but can we hang out? And she said, sure, we'll come and pick you up. And I was 17 at the time. So we went to PDAP, and PDAP stands for Palmer Drug Abuse Program for Teenagers. And I remember going in this room, and it was a bunch of sofas, and the lights went out as they lit candles. And it was a bunch of teenagers, and they were sitting there. And I kind of just scooted down in the sofa, but I felt myself ease into the wall, you know? Like, I had spent so much time wearing different masks, you know? Like, what do you want me to be? I'll be this person for you. I'll be that person just like me. But I felt myself ease into the wall and just meld with everybody. I don't know. I can't explain it, but they were sharing about feelings. You know, it wasn't doing cocaine and talking about, you know, the next concert that Judas Priest concert we're going to go to or whatever, you know, or drinking beer at the beach and hallucinating and chasing things that fly or, you know, just whatever stuff. We were talking about feelings, you know, like stuff that was going on with me that I couldn't talk to my mom about, that my siblings were not available. You know, I don't even think they went through it. I think they were going through the same things with drugs and alcohol. So I'm grabbing my glasses. These are sunglasses. They won't work. They'll work outside during the day. So I liked PDAP. I liked it a lot. And then what I did is I went to meetings on the weekends, I mean during the week, and then got loaded on the weekends. And so, you know, like on Thursday night, people at the meetings would go, how much time do you have? And I go, 4 days. And they're like, yes. And then Monday, how much time do you have? 1 day. Yes. Keep coming back. You know? And then one day I was getting loaded with these people twice my age and that boyfriend who was 25 at the time, and I was like, what? what are those sober people doing? What do they do on the weekends if they're not getting loaded? So on Monday, I went to school, and I talked to Amy, and I said, what do you guys do on the weekends? And she said, oh, they have sober dances. And it was so cool. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley in L.A. They had sober dances every Friday and Saturday night. There was about 60 of us. We were tight. 60 of us. We were tight. And we danced every Friday and Saturday night after a meeting, our regular meetings. Then we danced till about 1 in the morning. Then we went to Denny's. Oh, my God. Usually like 30 of us. And I feel so bad for those people. I wish I could find them so I could make amends to them. Oh, my God. You know, like, can I have saltines, a glass of water, and a salad with lots of ranch? You know, it's like I had $5 on me. I was a teenager getting sober, hanging out at Denny's, you know. And we hung out till sometimes 4 in the morning. Then we'd jump in the car and go to the beach and sleep all day. And that was like my first 5 years of sobriety was doing that. Dances, Denny's, the beach, meetings, all that jazz. Steps? I don't know about that. Sponsor? I don't know. I'm only 18. I didn't do a lot of stuff, right? I didn't hurt people. I didn't get married. I didn't really have a job to speak of. I didn't own a house. I didn't. What is there that I lost? What could I have done wrong? You know, I felt like I was too young. So anyway, I got a sponsor, and I did. We kind of went through. Okay, you've been going to AA meetings for a while. Are you an alcoholic? Yeah. Do you believe in a higher power? Well, yeah. Amy used to go to the beach with me, and we'd read Cahill Gibran. And we'd listen to George Winston, and we'd read poetry, and then we started hypnotizing each other, and then we got into reading about astrology, and all this what I call metaphysical jewelry, you know, because it was just very artificial, but it worked. It worked for me because it got me out of me, and it relaxed me. It gave me some serenity, you know, And so Amy introduced me to my higher power. She would get up at the podium and talk about God, and I ate it up. You know, I was like, I like her higher power. I want that. When I got a sponsor, it was like, okay, so you came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. Well, yeah, my life is getting better. I don't feel like I'm as so insane. I mean, I journal like 3 hours a day and go to 2 meetings a day. But that's okay, right? That's sanity, right? I mean, I'm not going outside and living life on life's terms. No, I mean, that's, don't rush me. But but I'm, you know, I'm doing the deal as best I can. And so I did the third step prayer, and I had a male sponsor, and he was Irish. And I liked his accent. And he was much older than me, and I don't know what attracted me to him. It wasn't anything physical or anything. I think I just liked something he said, maybe. I don't know. So we did the third step prayer together. We got on our knees, and we said it. And it wasn't anything funky or weird. But then I remember driving home and just feeling like my car was floating, you know? And I felt like I wasn't alone. I felt this energy in my car, in my seat next to me, and I just felt really relaxed. So then it was time to go on to the fourth step, okay? The fourth step, in the big book, it has columns, right? It talks about who are we pissed off at, right? And why we're pissed off at them, right? And then what it affects, right? And that's it. Then it's over, right? That's it. So that's what I did, just as it's outlined in the big book. The outlines, right? So I was pissed off at this person for doing this to me, and it affected my self-esteem. Damn them. I'm mad at this person for stealing money from me. You know, it affects my financial security. Damn them. And so that's what I did. I did all that stuff. And then I shared it with my sponsor. And they're like, good for you. Okay. And then I stopped doing my steps. I stopped doing them because it wasn't working. Why wasn't it working? I don't know. So I just kind of went on with doing things the best I could. I moved down to San Diego in 94. And I had gotten a job at a restaurant up in L.A. And the owner had this policy of, you know, when you got off work, you had to be walked out to your car. So he walked me to my car, and I didn't get back to my car for 2 days. And I was sober, and that's what I did in sobriety. I was growing up, you know. I was still doing all the things that I would have done if I was getting loaded. Not all of them. I wasn't getting loaded. But I was still being promiscuous. I was still lying. I was still cheating. I was getting fired from jobs. A lot of this stuff was going on. And some of the stuff I was like, you know, what are these character defects? I'm 8 years sober. When is it going to get better? So I ended up getting engaged to that guy moving down to San Diego. And it didn't work out. I got food poisoning, and I went to my doctor. And, you know, he did what he does for food poisoning. I don't know what they do. But he asked me how everything else was going. And I said, you know, I don't think things are going too bad. But I did have a loaded gun in my hand 2 nights ago. And I didn't make it home for 2 weeks because they sent me straight to the psych ward. They sent me straight to, what was it called then? I don't remember. But it was a place for mental health. But it was also for chemical dependency and alcoholism. So I went in there, and there's a bunch of people trying to get sober. And I come in with 8 years sober, and they're like, what are you doing here? And they lumped us together, and it was just kind of weird that they did that. But what I learned about myself was a lot in that 2 weeks. And basically, I was diagnosed bipolar. And in the big book, it talks about the different kinds of alcoholics, the different classifications. And we talked, I mean, we read at the beginning of the meeting the different kinds of methods we tried, right? Milk. So there are the psychopaths. There are the ones unwilling to admit that I'm just totally paraphrasing, blah, 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 blah. There's the manic depressive type, who is perhaps the least understood by his friends and about whom a whole chapter could be written but wasn't. So I spent 2 weeks in Charter. That was the name of it, Charter Hospital. And it was up in like Rancho Bernardo-ish area or something like that. And then I had to get some books and start learning about that. And what I learned is a lot of that stuff wasn't character defects. It was characteristics of something other than my alcoholism, of something bigger than me. I was feeling feelings that were too big for me to feel on my own. And so what I had to do was enlarge my spiritual life, you know? And right now, I'm working on my second step. I'm working on my second step because the higher power that I got from Amy stopped working. I got married. I picked up a newcomer. We've been married 21 years. Yes! Yes! Hey, hey! The campus of AA, ha ha. Boy meets girl. Anyway, we lost everything in 2008, our house, bankruptcy, the whole spiel. He was out of work for 4 years. The long and the short of it is we had to move to Virginia. It was a sentence for me. And I think after 2 years, we should have got off for good behavior, but it ended up being a seven-year sentence. And the AA out there, I couldn't feel it, you know. Amy and I met again on Facebook, and a couple of the guy who gave me my first big book when I was 30 days sober, he and I connected again, and some of that group, the dances, he was the DJ. Yeah, and she and I used to dance in front of the big speakers up front with our little things and, yeah, that stuff. And when we were really young, right, Amy's son was murdered. And I don't know what the real story is. She has this big movement going on, but it shook me to the core. And I don't know why. I'm a mom, too. I have two teenagers, and I dropped everything, and I flew back to L.A. for 2 weeks, and I stayed and helped her with all kinds of stuff, organizing stuff, pitching in money for food, renting chairs, doing all this, whatever you got to do, and she was atheist, and I was like, I don't get it. What do you mean, atheist? And so she was just talking about, you know, science, there is no God, you know, and all this stuff. But whatever she was saying, it was making sense to me. But I couldn't grasp the concept, but for some reason it was making sense to me. So I wouldn't be able to repeat what made sense to me, only that when I got back home, I was confused. And so I went to my AA meetings and I started talking about, I don't know what my God is. I'm confused. Maybe I'm agnostic. Maybe I'm atheist. Do I belong here? And the people in Virginia said, I went through that once. Just keep coming back. And I felt snuffed. I didn't feel understood. I was in pain. I was in spiritual pain. And that went on for 3 years until I came back to San Diego. And I hooked up with my posse. You know, back to the meeting that I was a regular at where my sponsor went, where we were in the books, we were in the literature and all that stuff. And I cried and I said, do I belong here? And I said, I'm so confused because this is a spiritual program, you know? And the second step talks about God. And then the third step and every other step after that. It's a spiritual program. But what do I do? Where do I fit in? You know, am I agnostic? Am I atheist? Because that God that she introduced me to, it felt like it was just ripped from me. And I was just confused. I'm like, I earned my seat because I got loaded day after day, blacked out, got sick, got taken advantage of, all these things. You know, hitchhiked in a blackout up to Bakersfield, by these 18-wheelers, just the things that I did, and I'm still alive. I earned my seat. But do I have to say the Lord's Prayer? You know? What about the third step prayer? What about the seventh step prayer? What about all these prayers? I don't know. So I'm on the second step. And in Bill's story, he had a hard time with the second step, too. But then all of a sudden, when his friend came to see him, and he said, there's something in you. You know, what is this thing you got? And he said, I got God. And he was like, I don't know about this. But then he did, too, when he asked, who am I? Who am I to say there is no God? But he was saying, I could go for such concepts as creative intelligence, universal mind, our spirit of nature. I can go for that. I can go for spirit of nature. I can go for something bigger than me. And then in italicized, why don't you choose your own concept of God? And so that's what I'm doing. I'm cruising from the second step to the third step. And it's hard. You know, it's hard to do that at 32 years of sobriety. You know? And, you know, like I have these little things in here to help me. You know, self-knowledge is not enough. It's not enough. It's in here. It's riddled. Right here. Simple concept of a higher power is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. My God is under reconstruction, you know? And so that's what I'm doing right now. I'm back at the beginning of the steps. I'm puzzled by being a mom of teenagers. You know what? My daughter is 18, and she's been driving how long, Neil? 6 months. And she's got a car and all this jazz. I've seen her in the car once. Talk about denial. I don't even want to see her in the car. I don't, you know, no, I don't want to know that. And then my 15-year-old is failing ninth grade. And he's in, they have a, what is that called? McAllister. He got busted for having a pot pen in school. And a girl took a hit of it, had a bad reaction. Supposedly she had a pill beforehand, but we don't know. And an ambulance came, and he got busted, and now he does this McAllister twice a week after school. But they test him, so I'm glad. I'm glad it's not me, because I'm a coddler, you know? I mean, I was talking last night and today to a friend, you know, where I'm like, you know, can we possibly talk about if it's not too much trouble, if you're okay, can you go to school today, please? You know, it's like, so for me to go up to him and go, hey, pee in this cup, you know, I don't know how. And then my daughter last week, I went to her room and, wait a minute. And then I could smell skunk coming out of the corner of her door. And so she opens the door, and I go, God, you're smoking pot in my house, and what's going on? No, I'm not. I said, I can smell it. Well, it's not mine. I just took it out. And I said, I don't know. I've never had pot that strong. It's probably a good thing I didn't have milk, right? Could you imagine? Anyway, so that's what I'm dealing with now, and you know, I was talking with some people last night, and my daughter came up to me about a year ago, and she said, you know what I realized, Mom? This is my first time being 17, when she was 17 last year. And this is your first time being a parent of somebody who's 17. This is my first time being a parent of an 18-year-old girl who's smoking pot and driving. This is my first time being a mom of a 15-year-old who's failing out of freshman year at high school. And what's imperative, I think, is that I do find this higher power and that I don't try to do it on my will. Because whether or not they know it, they got a higher power too, you know? And that higher power is working in their life with their journey. You know, we went on a cruise a couple weeks ago, and I was getting out of the pool, and she was in a hot tub for six people, and there was 15 in there, right? And beers and all these funky drinks that people drink now. I don't know what they are. But and then my daughter's right in the middle. And there's this guy with tattoos and a beard and all this stuff. And he goes, are you her mom? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. And he goes, she's okay. And I said, you know what? She's got her journey. She's on her journey. You know what I mean? She's 18. What am I going to do, rip her out of there? I don't get it. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. So, I don't know. I have a friend who's a parenting coach, and she's supposed to text me some books, and I hope she does, because I need to start reading them instead of Stephen King at night. It's just pretty stupid. I'm looking at a lot of my personal relationships, and what I do is, with the traditions, I apply them to my relationships with my family. It's part of, the traditions are for the group. They're, you know, people say, God, if they had traditions in politics or in this or in that. Well, I got to bring it into my home and I got to start practicing it. And I don't know how. And so what I've learned in these rooms is to ask for help. And that's what I'm starting to do. I'm going to circle around back to when I did my inventories, where I went up to step to the third column. I later, at 15 years of sobriety, I had my daughter. She was 4 months old, and my husband and I went out on our first date since she was born. And I had a psychotic episode. And I was confused because I was breastfeeding, but I was on antidepressants too. And I thought, maybe I should go off the antidepressants, and then I can breastfeed her. But then if I went off the antidepressants, I would get depressed, and I could become homeless. And then I thought, maybe that's the best thing, is I become homeless, and my husband will bring my daughter to me so I can breastfeed her under the bridge. So, best thinking in sobriety, right? So, we were at Buca de Beppo's downtown, and I ran away. I ran away from him, and he's running the streets looking for me, and I'm hiding in the alcoves and stuff. I'm having, like, a psychotic breakdown. He finds me. I start talking to people. Hey, you got a cigarette? And, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, I was freaking out. And he finds me, and I remember going to my regular home group and saying, my ass has fallen off. And I got a new sponsor, and she told me that there's more than three columns. I had done one, two, and three. And two was Amy's higher power, remember? And three was, I'm pissed off and you affected my. So what's the fourth column? My part! I have a part in this. And then I was taught a fifth column, which is the character defect associated with that. And so at 15 years sobriety, I went through the steps rigorously, painfully slow, and extremely thorough. I can't find my original big book right now. It's somewhere, probably in the garage, Neil. You need to look for it. I had to have it rebound a couple of times, but it's awesome. And then now I'm back at step two again. What I did when I came back from Virginia and had this whole God, what is God thing, I wrote a letter to Amy. I didn't give it to her. It wasn't necessary. But what I did is I broke up with her God. And I thanked her. I thanked her for introducing me to PDAP, to AA, to the dances, to Denny's, to the beach, to Cahill Gibran, to George Winston, to all those things, to the happy cramp, to the belly laugh, to all that stuff, you know, and then thanked her for the God that carried me for a long time, and said, now it's time for me to move on to my higher power. And so my higher power is under construction, and as vulnerable as I feel, it feels pretty awesome. You know, it feels pretty awesome because it's a God of my understanding, but I can also, like, read stuff, read AA literature and stuff. And there's a cool book, I don't know if you've read it, Came to Believe. I love that book. The print's really small, so I have to wear my glasses and have bright light, but it's really cool. I remember reading a lot of that when I went camping. And I had a couple aha moments, you know, and so I've been touching into that book and touching into a couple of other meditation books. And then I listen to you, because a lot of you have gone through what I'm going through, you know. Even if you have a year sobriety in comparison to my 32 years, there's so much that you've been through that I haven't. And then there's stuff that I've been through that maybe you haven't, you know? And so it's about being humble and teachable, you know? And that's kind of where I'm at, is in my In my humble opinion, I believe that I'm ready. I'm ready to move on. And I want to welcome the newcomers and congratulate. Was it Jeremy for 90 days? Yeah, it was. There you go. Bam. Now I can't remember the other ones. Jared and Richard or something like that. Every day is an opportunity. And I don't know what's going to unfold. I don't know what's going to come my way. But if I can face the day and greet it and help and be of service and be a woman of grace and dignity as the God of my misunderstanding, my ununderstanding would have me be, that's what I'm working towards. And it's a daily job. So thanks, Lori, for asking me to come out. And thank you for having me in your home. And I'll see you around. Thanks.